May it please the Court, Scott Llewellyn on behalf of Defendant Appellant Quest Communications International. I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. Three key points govern disposition of this case and require reversal of the District Court's denial of the motion to compel arbitration. First, under the filed tariff doctrine, the arbitration provision in the Quest tariff applicable to the services that MECA received is conclusively binding, regardless of any objections that MECA may raise to its enforcement. This Court and the Supreme Court have repeatedly made plain
that... Is there pending before the FCC any request to set aside that portion of the tariff?
Not to our
either
knowledge.
By Metro East or anybody else?
Not to our knowledge, Your Honor.
Okay.
Under the filed tariff doctrine, this Court and the Supreme Court have both made plain that the filed tariff doctrine protects all of the tariff terms, does not permit courts to review the validity or reasonableness of tariff terms, because the FCC has sole and exclusive authority to determine the validity of tariff provisions. Second major point here is that despite being conclusively binding under the filed...
Do you think that's really unbounded? I mean, suppose the tariff said any dispute arising under this tariff could be resolved by a majority vote at the primate house at the Brookfield Zoo. All orangutans get 2 votes.
Your Honor, the boundaries on the reasonableness of tariff terms are set by the FCC, and there are procedures by which MECA or any other customer who wishes to challenge a tariff's terms may bring such a challenge before the FCC.
Mm-hmm. And so the FCC, in other words, you do have the courage of your convictions.
Yes, and the FCC has made plain that it will review the validity of tariff provisions and that the filed tariff doctrine is not a bar.
I would hate to see the FCC's review of that tariff provision. They would have to say, we would have to compare the primate house of the Brookfield Zoo to the D.C. Circuit. In light of our history in the D.C. Circuit, we prefer the Brookfield Zoo tariff sustained.
Unfortunately, perhaps from this Court's perspective, or the D.C. Circuit's perspective, the FCC has the authority to make such a determination because this Court has repeatedly held it is vested with primary jurisdiction to determine the validity of tariff provisions, and courts have no such authority. This Court, in both Conman versus Sprint and Arsbury versus Illinois, made plain that if during the course of proceedings a challenge is raised to a tariff provision, the Court must instruct the party challenging the tariff to repair to the FCC. And again, it should be emphasized that the FCC not only provides procedures, but has made plain that it will rigorously review tariff provisions, and that the filed tariff doctrine is no bar before the FCC. So effectively, the filed tariff doctrine simply provides for which entity will determine the reasonableness of tariff terms.
Is this arbitration provision common in most tariffs, or is this unique to this one?
Your Honor, as the deposition testimony in the district court, which has been cited by MECA, demonstrates, it is somewhat of an industry standard, which tends to mean that, for example, the larger carriers such as AT&T and MCI and Quest have arbitration provisions, but the FCC has made plain that there are hundreds of long-distance providers, and thus customers are protected by their ability to choose between the various terms provided by the different providers.
Has the arbitration provision been challenged in the FCC or, I guess, any other court as far as saying that it's simply unenforceable?
To our knowledge, there has been no challenge to the arbitration provision in this or any other tariff. Under the Federal Arbitration Act, while the tariff is conclusively binding under the filed tariff doctrine, this Court has nonetheless made plain that the tariff is the contract or the agreement between the parties. The District Court and MECA largely ignore this Court's rulings on this point, but this Court and others have recognized the dual nature of tariffs, that they are conclusively binding under the filed tariff doctrine, and courts cannot hear challenges to their validity or enforceability, yet they are nonetheless the contract between the parties, and thus courts can interpret or imply them. And as such, under the plain language of the Federal Arbitration Act, tariffs are contracts or agreements that may be enforced via FAA procedures. MECA simply asserts, and the district court simply assumed, that tariffs are not contracts or agreements, but in both Conman and Arthur, this court held that, in fact, they are. Further, there is little distinction between the types of consumer contracts in which courts routinely uphold and enforce arbitration provisions and tariffs. The district court objected, as does MECA, on the grounds that tariffs present only unilateral and non-negotiable terms, but many consumer contracts do the same. And this court, in, for example, Hill versus Gateway, upheld the enforcement of an arbitration provision in an ordinary contract.
You know, the Court of Appeals of Illinois last week rejected the Gateway decision, said it was wrong.
With all due respect, Your Honor, we are for the Seventh Circuit, and I would understand that the Court of Appeals of Illinois...
Of course, the Arbitration Act says that arbitration agreements are enforced except to the extent they would not be enforceable as contracts under state law. Is it your position that under the file tariff doctrine, enforceability under state law is also unimportant?
Our position is that...
Now, it turns out the Court of Appeals of Illinois rejected the Gateway decision because they disagreed with the federal court about the meaning of federal law. They said Gateway was incompatible with the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act. So it wasn't a state law decision at all, but I'm asking as a matter of theory, if the arbitration clause were the kind of thing that, say, a state law had disapproved on normal contract grounds, and the tariff then refers to the Arbitration Act, which allows normal contract grounds to defeat an arbitration clause, what happens?
Your Honor, this is a matter of tariff interpretation. Both the district court and MECA ignore
the fact... That's why I'm specifying that the tariff refers to the Arbitration Act.
Exactly.
Right? And let me put my question a different way. Can the tariff itself amount to a departure from the filed tariff doctrine? That is, can the tariff say, can it be an integral part of the tariff that these terms are reviewable under normal state contract law rules?
No, it cannot, Your Honor. There is no exception to the filed tariff doctrine that permits carriers to waive the bar upon court review of tariff provisions.
No. Maybe I'm just not being precise enough. Suppose the tariff says you arbitrate unless that's unconscionable, right? It just has the rule in it. Now, it would not take, in order to make an unconscionability finding, any setting aside of the tariff. The application of the unconscionability doctrine would be something specified by the tariff.
Yes, Your Honor, but in that instance...
All right, now, instead of saying unconscionable, the tariff refers to state law, and state law has got an unconscionability provision in it. Is that any different?
Yes, Your Honor, because the tariff refers to the FAA, and as a matter of tariff interpretation, the question is what that reference means. And the standards governing tariff interpretation are well settled, and those standards indicate that a tariff should not be interpreted to reach absurd results. And here, it would plainly be absurd to interpret the single sentence referring to the FAA and invoking its procedures to vitiate the four other paragraphs in the tariff detailing how that arbitration should proceed. So as a question of tariff interpretation, it is impermissible as an absurd result because it negates the tariff provision in its entirety. And on three grounds, in fact, it is contrary to the doctrines governing tariff interpretation. First, it is inconsistent with the filed tariff doctrine, which provides that courts should not review tariff provisions, leaving aside the theoretical question previously asked. Second, it is contrary to the general intent of the FAA. There is no dispute, and this court has often stated, that the FAA was intended to remove rather than to impose impediments to the enforcement of arbitration provisions, that the FAA, in fact, makes arbitration provisions easier to enforce. Thus, it would be absurd to interpret a reference to the FAA to undermine the enforceability.
This unconscionability argument is available before the FCC, is it not?
Yes, it would be, Your Honor. The FCC is free to review the tariff's reasonableness on any grounds and provide procedures for doing so.
To go to the FCC, obviously, Metro complains that it is very expensive to go through this arbitration proceeding for a relatively small claim. What is the, if they were to go to the FCC first, what would be, would there be some burdensome cost there as well?
Your Honor, there are no comparable filing fees or payment of arbitrators. There would be no requirement that they pay for the FCC commissioners to review the complaint, if that is what you are asking.
What if
other than the need to fend off Lloyd Cutler's legions?
Yes, there might be that cost, Ron.
Well, what would be the follow-up at the FCC if they got an unfavorable ruling or something? Could they still go to court and challenge it?
Yes, in fact, if the FCC ruled against them, then they would be entitled to court review of the FCC decision.
So it's an appeal from the FCC?
Yes, it is.
Is that an administrative appeal, or is that how does that work as far as the
options in court? Is that within the D.C. Circuit's mandatory jurisdiction, or does it come to the regional circuit?
Yes, as I understand, it is a mandatory appeal.
Mandatory jurisdiction in the D.C. Circuit.
Okay. There's the third inconsistency in interpreting the reference to the FAA to vitiate the arbitration provision. Under the well-settled operation of the FAA, courts, when presented with an arbitration provision,
rebuttal.
I would like to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal.
Certainly, Mr. Llewellyn.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Sprong.
Good morning.
Mr. Strong, before we get going.
Yes, sir.
Your case was scheduled for 9:30 this morning.
Correct.
We expect counsel to be here. We are here. Mr. Llewellyn is here. You should be here. Making arrangements that depend on a favorable break in the weather, not a prudent way to arrange your practice, and does not show respect for the court or for your opponent.
Absolutely. I offer my sincerest apologies. We actually did call ahead for weather several hours before the flight.
If you have a 9:30 argument, you come in the previous day.
I will do so in all future arguments.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. The questions of the panel to Mr. Llewellyn, and particularly Your Honor, hit right on the issue in this case. This is not a filed rate doctrine case. What we have is a tariff that very specifically says that arbitrability of claims is to be determined under the FAA, not under the filed rate doctrine. It's analogous to your question about whether if the tariff said that it's arbitral unless it's unconscionable. That is exactly what this tariff says. It says it's arbitrable.
No, certainly not exactly what this tariff says.
By interpolation or extrapolation.
It's not exactly what this tariff says. Something else.
By extrapolation, I'm reading into that if you are going to make arbitrability of claims subject to the Federal Arbitration Act, then you have invoked all of the protections for both parties of the Federal Arbitration Act. And the decisions of this court and the decisions of the host of circuit courts have made it clear that there are requirements before arbitrability or arbitration can be compelled.
You say a host of courts.
Yes.
Are there any courts that have held an arbitration clause in a tariff to be unenforceable?
I don't believe there are any cases that have dealt with that directly, one way or the other.
So it's not a host of other courts. This is, in fact, a case of first impression.
With respect to that issue, correct. What I meant to say was that there are circuit courts, including this court, that have recognize that, for instance, a claim is not arbitrable under the Federal Arbitration Act if the arbitration clause strips the plaintiff, or the customer in this case, of federally protected rights. That's the McCaskill decision that this court put out just a few months ago. There's also the Perez decision from the 11th Circuit. This arbitration clause does exactly that. Under MECA's Federal Communications Act claim, it is entitled to seek, if it prevails, attorney's fees and costs.
What does that have to do with the Federal Arbitration Act? You know, if I understand your argument, it is that particular clause adopting the American rule is incompatible with the Federal Communications Act. I don't see what that has to do with arbitration. It just means that if you arbitrate, your position is that under the Communications Act, you're entitled to attorney's fees if you prevail.
And we would be if we were in court. If we were forced to arbitrate under the arbitration clause that is in Quest tariff, we are not entitled to even seek those types of costs or attorney's fees.
My question is, I don't understand what that has to do with arbitrability. Looks to me like there are two separate questions. One is, who will decide? And the other is, what is the rule for the award of attorney's fees? Is it a fee-shifting rule, or is it the American rule? And one can easily decide those two questions different ways. I don't see why a problem, as you perceive it, in the fee-shifting doctrine would affect the arbitrability of the claim.
Because what the McCaskill Court has held... The
McCaskill decision did not discuss this question.
What I believe the McCaskill Court was saying is that if an arbitration clause like
if this is another, the unconscionability thing is right there, you can look at the McCaskill opinion until you're blue in the face. It does not discuss this question. It was not raised by the parties. It was not raised by the employer. It's just not an issue in McCaskill. But it may be an issue here, and perhaps we should discuss it.
If I understand your question, my answer is going to have two parts. The first is to try to emphasize that what McCaskill said is that if an arbitration clause deprives the plaintiff of a federally protected remedy, as this clause does, as the Quest Clause does, then it's unenforceable. Your question then goes to, well, if are there considerations of unconscionability in...
No, I don't think you are dealing with my question. Perhaps you should just proceed.
I'm attempting to, Your Honor. I'm sorry. Perhaps I didn't understand the question.
I'm asking what a dispute about the rule for the allocation of attorney's fees has to do with arbitrability. It's a procedural rule that will be applied by whoever decides the case. You might as well say that your case can't be litigated because there's a provision in the tariff which says we use the American rule rather than a fee-shifting doctrine, and therefore it can't be litigated either. No, I just don't see what the fee-shifting rule has to do with who the decider will be, whether it's an arbitrator or a judge. It has to do with whether fees are shifted.
But I think what it is saying, you can't litigate your case. It's saying you can't litigate your case under the FCA. You have to go to the arbitration panel, and you can't ask for the very remedies that you could ask for if you were litigating your Federal Communications Act claim.
Well, one of the problems is class action, too, isn't it?
Oh, correct. Sure.
Obviously, this is one-on-one, the way it's set up now, and I wonder... That's why my question is about going to the FCC first to resolve the problem as opposed to going somewhere else and possibly magnifying it considerably. This arbitration clause may trip that up, and therefore you need to get out of the way.
Well, there are several problems with going to the FCC. Number one, the FCC is not an expert on the arbitrability of claims. That's the exclusive province of the courts. And so to ask the FCC whether they think a particular claim is arbitrable under the FAA, I think is going to the wrong...
Can't they deal with the claim? You think they're charging too much?
Sure, although, and it's important to note in this case, because we are not attacking Quest's tariff. We're trying to enforce it.
We're trying to enforce part of it. Hmm.
No, I think we're trying to enforce the arbitration clause in the sense that the arbitration clause asks or conditions arbitration on whether something is arbitral under the FAA. And for instance, as you pointed out, if a claim is unconscionable under state law, or if a contract is unconscionable under state law, then it can't be arbitrated under the FAA. Which actually feeds into the whole notion of the Greentree case and how Greentree impacts on this case. The evidence in the district court was unrefuted that it would cost Mecca about $2,400 to go through the arbitration of an $80 claim. That is not something that holds up under state law unconscionability scrutiny, and it didn't hold up in the cases that have come down since Greentree.
Well, the only advantage of going to court then is fee shifting.
Well,
you win the $80 claim in court, and the other guy pays. Is that the way it works?
As a practical matter, too, the FCC can take quite a bit of time to rule on these types of provisions. Then you cannot proceed as a class action before the FCC. So, assuming that you, for instance, got the arbitration clause turned around,
I don't even understand what a class action would be before the FCC. If you ask the FCC to invalidate this clause of the tariff, it will be invalid for everybody nationwide. There's no difference between an individual action and a class action, so far as I can see.
I think that's correct with respect to the arbitration clause.
Or any other part of the tariff.
Going to the FCC in our underlying case makes no sense because we're not asking for the tariff to be invalidated. The tariff says if you have a Cintrex line, you're charged 45 cents a line. Quest is charging Mecca $4.25 a line. So, the Seventh Circuit opinions are very clear that you do not go to the FCC simply to enforce the tariff. You go if you're trying to invalidate a portion of the tariff.
Suppose if you did go to the FCC and got a favorable result, what would that be and where do you go next?
Assuming there's no appeal to the D.C. Circuit or that we were successful on appeal in the D.C. Circuit upholding that, I think we'd be right back where we are now, trying to enforce the tariff part of the case, that being the Cintrex part, and trying to get a class certified so that we could begin recovering money for the Cintrex users who are being charged, in some cases, almost $4 as much per line as the tariff says they're supposed to be charged. The district court correctly held that there was no agreement to arbitrate as required by the FAA. The reasons for that are that the tariff provisions, which Mr. Llewellyn referred to, are simply filed with the FAA, I'm sorry, the FCC. There was no effort made, and the record was very clear on this, that Quest made any effort to notify customers. In Mecca's case, they never entered into any sort of written arrangement with Quest. One month they got a bill from Quest because they had changed their local provider. And so the underlying facts in this case show that there was never a written agreement between Mecca, certainly, and Quest to arbitrate claims. The King Court, which is a district court in California, focused on that and also focused on the notion of the filed rate doctrine somehow countervailing the arguments about whether something was arbitrable. And what the King Court indicated and stated was that it makes no sense to, if you're talking about the filed rate doctrine, first of all, the filed rate doctrine is designed to protect the customers against discriminatory rates and discriminatory practices. That has nothing to do with whether the arbitration clause and where you go to vindicate your rights. But the King Court also noted that it would make no sense to require arbitration and thousands of them, because you can't arbitrate class actions, where the arbitrators are making decisions that are unreported and that may conflict with one another, all under the guise of trying to be uniform in applying the tariff provisions. So that is another reason that the arbitration clauses in tariffs can't simply claim the advantage of the filed rate doctrine without otherwise satisfying arbitrability under the FAA or unconscionability under state law or the various other hurdles that need to be overcome in terms of a contract arbitration clause being enforced.
Who approves these tariffs?
Well, the testimony in this case was that you file the tariff, and in fact this particular clause
with the FCC.
Yes, it's filed on day one with the FCC. And on day two, it's part of the tariff.
So they just rubber stamp it? They don't look at them?
There is no indication in our case that the FCC has ever looked at this clause. And in fact, the testimony of the 30B6 witness of Quest was that they have no idea. It's filed the next day. It's part of the tariff.
So that's why it wouldn't go to the FCC. They never looked at it. So why ask them to look at it now?
Correct. But they obviously didn't look at it overnight between day one and day two, and there's no indication that they've ever looked at it.
tariffs are effective automatically under federal law unless suspended or unless later revoked. There's no tariff is ever looked at by an agency in advance. There is a suspension power, rarely used, and there's a power to review it later. But the argument you're now making is essentially that there should be no filed rate doctrine because the structure of tariff law is one in which there's no advance review.
Oh, I'm not trying to make
that's obviously not the Supreme Court's view of matters.
And I'm not trying to make that argument at all, Your Honor.
Then I don't understand what argument you're making.
I think
no tariff, with the rare exception of one that's suspended, is ever looked at in advance by any federal agency.
I think the question was, how are these tariffs filed and how do they become effective? And I was simply trying to answer that in this case, there's no evidence that the FCC looked at the arbitration clause or considered it, and in fact the arbitration clause was simply filed.
Yeah, but I just don't understand what the legal significance of that is, because that's how all clauses in all tariffs are almost always treated. It doesn't distinguish the arbitration clause from the rate provision.
I don't know if there's any legal significance. I was trying to point out a factual significance in response to a question from the panel.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Sprong. Uh-huh. Anything further, Mr. Llewellyn?
Yes. I have four quick points in rebuttal, if I may. First, Your Honor, your last point is exactly correct. MECA's main objection is to the FCC's tariff regime. And it is clear that under the filed tariff doctrine, such objections go to the FCC. For example, MECA complains about how the fee-shifting provisions of the arbitration provision in the tariff may interact with the requirements of the Federal Telecommunications Act. That is clearly a question for the FCC to determine under its primary jurisdiction to determine such matters, and there are clear procedures to permit MECA to obtain such a ruling from the FCC. And such a ruling with respect to the tariff would apply to all putative members of the class who took service under this tariff. MECA also ignores the fact that we're talking about the interpretation of the reference to the FAA in the tariff. The standards say that a tariff should not be interpreted to reach an absurd result, particularly where there's a reasonable alternative. Here there's an entirely reasonable alternative that the tariff's reference to the FAA clarifies that the tariff's arbitration provision will be enforced via FAA procedures, because as this court has explained, the tariff is the contract or agreement between the parties. As such, it can be enforced via FAA procedures, but because the FAA and its general operation does not undermine the validity or enforceability of arbitration provisions, the tariff's arbitration...
Carriers' tariffs that have arbitration clauses have the same kind of reference to the Federal Arbitration Act.
I do not know, Your Honor. It is also inconsistent to interpret the reference to the FAA to entirely void the arbitration provision, where courts generally, in determining the enforceability of provisions under the FAA, look to the law that ordinarily governs against the backdrop of the pro-arbitration presumptions of the FAA. So, for example, with an ordinary contract, may I finish? My time is up.
Not yet.
You have a minute left.
Okay. Pardon me.
There are three lines.
With respect to an ordinary contract, courts, against the backdrop of the pro-arbitration presumptions and procedures of the FAA, look to the contract law of the state that would ordinarily govern. And the Seventh Circuit has made plain that federal law governs the entire contractual relationship between a carrier and its customer. There is no state law. This court said as much in Comet. Therefore, there is no reason to look to state law or contract principles to determine the validity of the enforceability of the arbitration provision here. And instead, the court should look to the law that ordinarily governs the filed tariff doctrine, under which the tariff is conclusively binding. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. The case is taken